Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
The Neverland Podcast, episode 100.
Up to Neverland.
Take the start of the right and stay until morning. Neverland.
Good morning, Neverland!
Take your pixie out of your pocket, wave her around a little bit, get some of that pixie dust out on you, get your happiest thought, and here's a good happy thought for you. 100 episodes of the Neverland Podcast. This is it. Right here is the official 100th episode. Now, of course, you know, if you count some of the bonus contents I released, including a little release yesterday that you on the subscribers from iTunes and Stitchers, etc., you got a special Halloween little bit there with some stories and some music and things like that, so it's very important that you subscribe through iTunes. But, you know, not counting those bonus episodes, this is the official 100th numbered episode, because if you look at a bonus episode, I'll do like 0.1, 0.5, whatever, that kind of a thing. So this makes this the official 100th episode. And I, of course, am your Pan, the Spider Pan, Jeremy, here at the Neverland Podcast, and we are going to celebrate 100 episodes in what I thought was probably the most fun way we could. We're going to have a clip show, just like when you used to watch TV in the 80s, and they would have... I don't know if it was necessarily a season finale, but they would just have the show where they would suddenly go and discuss memories for whatever reason of like all the previous past episodes of that season or previous seasons, things like that. It was always a lot of fun. Well, consider this episode to be one of those. I'm calling it 100 clips. Of course, there's only really 99 clips from 99 previous shows, but if you count the clips you're hearing right now, that's 100. So see if you can keep up and keep count and think back and remember some of these episodes. Some of you have probably been with me from the beginning and have heard all the episodes. Some of you may be new, and you're going to hear a lot of new material. But I must say, it was a lot of fun and a lot of work putting all of this together, because it helped me relive a few memories as I went through and selected some clips. But without further ado or any more talking from me, here we go. Enjoy them, and you'll hear from me about midway through when we hear everything from season one into season two. There'll be a little space in there where I have something fun to share with you.
To Disney and beyond.
One of the number one things that for people who are my age and even maybe a little older, maybe a little younger, the number one thing we're going to remember is a sound effect that would come on CBS whenever there was a great holiday special coming up. And it went a little something like this. Okay, so then when you'd hear that, you knew something cool was about to happen.
Hi, I'm Everett, and I got a little bit of a story to tell. That when I was a child, I was really very sickly, and it meant so much to me that my family did show so much concern. And I remember I had uncles and aunts and cousins just coming to my house all the time and bringing me presents and food and cheering me up. And I'm just saying, it's wonderful to have a family that's caring, but it's even more blessed when you have a family that's like the family of God. And that's how I'm happy to have both.
That's one of my favorite memories is whenever I was 11 years old, we did this thing called the Christians Christmas Carol.
Yeah, we kind of got bored with doing the Nativity the same way every time.
So yeah, maybe I was 12. I'm trying to remember what year.
Oh, it was a long time ago.
The first time I wrote it all out, and I still had to teach it once in a while. But it was called The Christian's Christmas Carol. I played Bob Cratchit on the first one, and we had some other feller who was just visiting for a while who played Scrooge. But my favorite memory of that one was that Jeremy played Tiny Tim.
And I was tall, skinny, weird, wiry kid at the time. I was, I was skeletal.
What cracked me up was I had no idea how you're going to be dressed and came your turn to come out.
Because it said in the script to come out in pajamas, and what I was wearing for pajamas at the time, because it was cold, was a pair of white long johns.
He comes walking out, and the whole church bursted out in laughter.
It was great.
It was funny.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Memorable.
Oh, yeah, because it was pretty much like I came out wearing white tight. All right, so the second movie we saw was Saving Mr. Banks. This was very good. It has some moments of a little bit of levity, and it is fun watching some of the details if you've heard in the stories of the making of it, like I have. It's fun watching it kind of brought to life, but it's a very good story, and I know you liked it because you cried.
Yeah, it was very dramatic, especially with there towards the end.
But James Avery was the Junkyard Dog on that. But for cartoons, there's a lot of other cartoons that he voiced. But for the one we're all going to remember the most, it's definitely going to have to be this one right here.
But you may call me the Shredder.
That's right. He was on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. As the Shredder. Today, we are one of many days that we're going to be able to talk about Star Wars. I say this will be the first of many times because, let's face it, this was a big part of our childhood, if you're my age, or even older than me, it's going to be a big part of your childhood, and even younger than me, this is still a big part of your childhood. So we have to be able to talk about Star Wars anytime that we feel like it. Charles in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Baio.
Yeah.
From the really awful spinoff from Happy Days, Joni Loves Chachi.
Well, he was on Happy Days for a long time.
Right, too. He was on Happy Days, but Happy Days was falling apart, I think, to me. When you took Ron Howard out there without Richie, it wasn't the same.
When he first showed up, Richie was still there, but yeah, right. It didn't take long for it to fall apart.
And it became the Fonzie show, and I loved Henry Winkler and Fonzie.
Still do, yeah.
But you can't base the whole show around him. That'd be like turning Family Matters completely into the Urkel show. Oh, that's right, they did, and it tanked.
You know, we had a few, and I really loved My Ponies, and I got into them at the beginning of it, in the really early 80s, before later on when they had lots of different varieties of ponies, ponies that had fuzzy little plush, attached to them, or sprinkles, or, lots of other little different things, little jewels and stuff that they would have attached to them.
Some other news that I find to be very interesting. I'm not sure what to think of this one. I'm kind of hoping it does come to fruition. But since Disney does have ownership of all of Lucasfilm now, there are reports that Pixar is looking to make a Star Wars spinoff film. There was a while back when Pixar story supervisor Kelsey Mann had said that he would love to do a Star Wars spinoff centered around Han Solo and the Millennium Falcon. Don't know if that's what we might possibly expect. Pixar, sometimes does original things, sometimes doing not so original. There's a lot of sequels that they've done, and most people seem to like it when they do something original. But I'm very excited about the possibilities of having, say, John Lasseter and Andrew Staten and maybe even Brad Bird kind of collaborating on creating a Star Wars film. Now, tell me that wasn't fantastically cheesy and fantastically awesome. I really enjoy listening to that. It is so off-the-wall fun. I mean, really, the old Masters of the Universe television series that we all watched was pretty goofy and cheesy and crazy with their moral lessons at the end. But we love it anyway. And boy, I tell you what, these audio recordings of these books really take the cake and really take me back. I mean, boy, He-Man was just the greatest toy you could have next to Star Wars.
I know there is a God, and that he hates injustice and slavery. I see the storm coming. I know his hand is in it. If he has a place, work for me. And I think he has. I believe I'm ready. I am nothing but
it's Thundercats related. So everybody get excited right now.
Thunder! 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 Thundercats! Ho!
Okay, now if that didn't bring back any memories for you, then you either were too young or you never watched it. Hey, now for all of you that were fans of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, this is kind of a rare bit because I think here in the States, probably most people maybe might be familiar with the movie, then other people will be familiar with the books, but how many of those people also are familiar with the fact that there was a radio show in the UK that all of this came from, that the author of the books actually was doing this radio show? And so here's a little song by the actual voice of Marvin the Paranoid Android. I have no idea who the guy's name is, but it's a little cute song called Marvin, I Love You.
Amazon is fed by waterfalls, like right here. This is called Inspiration Falls. People always ask us, well, why is it called Inspiration Falls? Would you like to know why?
Yes.
Thank you for asking. That's so nice of you. As you watch this water go gently tumbling over the rocks, it inspires you to go deeper and deeper into the jungle.
This is the story of Raiders of the Lost Ark. You can read along with me in your book. You will know it is time to turn the page when you hear the bullwhip crack like this.
But the quite big question I want to ask and have some answers to is, who is your favorite Muppet and why?
I don't know. I have lots of favorites, but probably some of the ones that I like the most. I have a feeling for Beaker. Because he's that science nerdy kind of guy, and he's always kind of the guinea pig for Bunsen. And but I also like the Swedish Chef.
From billion-dollar blockbuster films to TV, home entertainment, video games, and consumer products, The Dark Knight continues to resonate with audiences worldwide and rightfully deserves his place as a global pop culture icon for the ages. Batman is the single most successful superhero film franchise in history, and there have been more theatrical movies released based on Batman than any other comic book character. In video games, the Batman Arkham franchise is also the most successful superhero game concept ever. Batman consistently breaks records in every incarnation of his character and remains the gold standard by which all other comic book sales are measured. I have heard that in some reviews that they're calling this is like, instead of a superhero movie, this is more like a spy thriller. But to me, that's kind of a lot of what Captain America does these days. It was very much like a spy thriller. It was very cool. Had a lot of good twists and turns. A lot of different things going on. Actually a lot of pretty good humor. Very good acting by a lot of the characters. Now, I should have probably brought up a list of who all played who on there. The man they got to cast as Sam Wilson, also known as the Falcon, he was excellent. They did a very good job of introducing Sam Wilson to you and letting you start to like the character before he even gets his flight suit going, and then you're just excited to see him flying around and helping Cap out.
Try and comfort the normals that have even more fear than you. Or do you, Hulk Hogan, kick the doors out? Kick the cockpit door down. Take the two pilots that have already made the sacrifice so that you can face this challenge. Dispose of them, Hulk Hogan. Assume the controls, Hulk Hogan. Shove that control into a nosedive, Hulk Hogan.
Well, I remember being a big fan of Steven Spielberg's films, and I'm still a big fan, whether it be Close Encounters or Jaws or Indiana Jones. Well, I remember on my sixth birthday, I got to make a choice. I could either go see Raiders of the Lost Ark again for like this fifth or sixth time, or we could go see E.T., you know, as a family. So I'll never forget it. That was a good day for me. I remember my toy still. I remember getting a Lone Ranger and a silver toy. I remember going to Godfather's Pizza, and I remember going to see E.T., and boy, I just fell in love with the movie. And I remember that Christmas Santa Claus brought me a toy of E.T. that came with a little miniature toy of the Simon Says Speak and Spell.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
I got a whole huge bag of my very own of Reese's Pieces.
Okay, so that sound is from a 1918 carousel. In 1918, former cabinet maker Marcus L. Illions meticulously carved 64 jumping horses and two chariots to create the Illions Supreme Carousel, one of the most famous and reproduced carousels in the world. Known for all their wood horses with high swept manes adorned with jewels, and only five original Supreme models were ever built by Illions. Now installed at Worlds of Fun, the 90-foot carousel is one of only two operating in the world. And it's kind of nice we have it. It's a very big, nice carousel that actually plays music the old-fashioned way, and I always love swinging by it, and I usually give it a ride every time I come by. Okay, so now we're here with Philip and Seth, and we can get their kind of thoughts on the Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Well, it wasn't necessarily amazing, in my opinion.
it's actually what a critic said.
Yeah,
this was not amazing.
But I don't know. There's parts of it I thought were okay, and I really liked his outfit a lot better than this, and any of the other ones that have been made. But I don't know. I was a little disappointed in it, but for the most part, I don't know, maybe I'm outgrowing the comic book movies, but I doubt it because I still love Captain America, you know, so.
Not every company's doing them as well as Disney is right now.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. And I loved Avengers and all that, so.
Yeah.
In this one, I thought the tone of it was back and forth and was kind of undecisive if it was a comedy or if it was serious or whatever. So at the end of it, I liked it, that part of it, but for the most part, I thought it could have been better, but it also could be worse, I guess.
But getting together with and making new friends is what podcasting's greatest benefit is. And the fact that I've got, you know, 30 to 50,000 people that listen to the show each and every month, and that some of these people contact me, and some of these people come out to the park, and when they come out to the park, they know that on Friday afternoons between 5 and 7, I'm out at Trader Sam's every single week. So they know that they can come over, meet me, and say hi. And they get to meet me, but more importantly, I get to meet them.
Yeah.
And there's just so much fun to meet all of these people, especially the people who are like longtime listeners who know you better than you know yourself.
Oh, yeah. Whenever we were kids, there was two times. Once a year, Channel 5 would do Monster Week, where every afternoon they would show a different monster. It could be Gamera, Godzilla, King Kong, you know, something. Mm-hmm. Oh, we look forward to it all year. And during the summer, up at Metro North Theater, they would have their dollar matinees.
Yeah.
Mom would take us to see that. And a lot of them was Godzilla, Gamera, yeah. The Gargantuas. I don't know. I remember we'd always ask Mom, is there a monster in it? Whenever we were going to see it. Like Sinbad, Eye of the Tiger, and the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad and all them. And,
I don't think I saw that.
What was it? Mysterious Island and The Land That Time Forgot and Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Okay, so there it was back in 1991. I first saw the six-player stand-up of X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it played kind of like the, you know, we were already big fans of the Ninja Turtle game. So when I saw the thing, I was like, it's like the Ninja Turtles, only it's these X-Men people that I didn't really know anything about. Now, I had heard some stuff before because there had been people who talked about Pride of the X-Men, which I had not at this time. I'll have to share that theme here in a little bit, which I did not see because I didn't know who they were. But you saw the first run of that, right?
Yes, I did. It was in the 80s. I remember I was sick on a Sunday morning, and Warner Brothers used to have this Sunday morning show.
You mean Hanna-Barbera?
Did I say Warner Brothers?
Yeah, you said Warner Brothers.
I'm sorry, Hanna-Barbera.
Now, granted, you know, Hanna-Barbera's been bought out by Warner Brothers.
Yeah, but, so that's kind of ironic.
But it hadn't happened, I don't think, at that time.
But anyway, there was cartoons where they used to have, like, Paw Bears and Yogi
Paw
Bear.
Paw Bears.
Yeah. And then, but anyway, they had, sometimes they show Spider-Man stuff. And on this time, they showed the X-Men cartoon, and I thought it was awesome.
Pride of the X-Men. Let's go ahead and play that theme right now. Why not?
Well, there's two things I wanted to say. First, when you first started talking about alien symbiotes, you know, the first thought that I had of was the movie Alien and the chest huggers and everything, or the chest bursters and everything. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, that's a good one, but no, where you went was better. And I like the fact that you just kind of glassed over Spider-Man 3. And didn't really that too much.
Yeah, that was not a good representation of Venom at all. 1 had actually, like, conquered the world before
the eugenics wars.
The eugenics wars, where they'd actually made these race of supermen who are super intelligent and super strong and everything. And but all these great scenes, this interactions between Khan and the nurse, where she's kind of attracted to him as his power, and she's always been into powerful kind of somewhat evil men, you know. And so she's very attracted to Khan, but he's got these great lines to us, like, stay or go, but whatever you do, do what did you choose to do, and just great, ridiculous dialogue that they gave him. But, you know, it's weird to think that he had one episode of Star Trek, and then probably still the greatest Star Trek movie that's ever going to be made, although I've loved most of them, but the greatest one is still going to be The Wrath of Khan.
I was in The Smurfs, but I played Denisa, who was Gargamel's niece. So Paul Winchell's niece, his bratty niece.
Paul Winchell was Gargamel?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, that's not the only time you worked with Paul Winchell, because if we hop up ahead to the Gummy Bears.
Yes.
You had Paul Winchell in there, was Zummy Gummy, and then you were Sunny Gummy.
I played Sunny Gummy. Ta-da! How do I look?
Which was one of my favorite shows when I was younger. I loved the Gummy Bears.
Aw, thank you. I appreciate that.
You had a lot of great familiar voices, because even, Alonzo Music? I always get the first name wrong.
Lorenzo Music.
Lorenzo Music. There,
Bill Scott, Rocky, mm-hmm. Rocky and Bullwinkle fame.
Yeah.
He was Bullwinkle. And June Foray, who played Rocky, was also, she played Grammy Gummy.
Yes. But I thought we would just have some fun and listen to some different kind of music. Some of it going to be comical. Some of it going to be kind of maybe from a superhero TV show or movie or something like that. Either way, I think we're going to have just a lot of fun. And we may just do this every once in a while just to kind of, sit around and listen to some fun music and have a good time. So without further ado, let's just get going with it. I am currently pulling out of the parking lot from the movieplex, whatever you want to call it, just came out of Transformers Age of Extinction, the fourth in this franchise. This is supposed to be the beginning of a new trilogy. They're kind of trying to relaunch things, apparently, with a new cast of humans and some different perspective, although they have kept in mind everything that has happened in the previous three films. I gotta say, we love our country of America because we do have these rights and freedoms, and that's kind of also central to what we feel like in Neverland. We have the right to pursue what makes us happy and what we dream of, and we just got to keep going even when we get knocked down. We have that right, we have that freedom, and we got to take advantage of it.
Is this a real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality.
Our next one comes again from Marvel, and this is actually very big news. Just recently, Marvel announced that their first Star Wars publication since the Walt Disney Pictures Studio purchased Lucasfilm in 2012. Star Wars, the original Marvel Years omnibus, is coming to shelves early next year.
Oh yeah, he had pictures and magazines that had covers and stuff from it.
And I think maybe even some...
Oh, he had toys from it as well.
I was thinking concept art or cells.
Yeah, I think he had some cells too.
Oh, he had some character sketches of several of the villains. I remember Solomon Grundy and Scarecrow, I think.
Oh, yeah, there was a couple of different versions of Scarecrow, because that when he made his first appearance, he was a bit more kind of realistic and very kind of creepy, kind of skinny Scarecrow, and then later on they gave him this weird big mouth thing, and which was still kind of creepy, but I think they were trying to calm it down, because in the first appearance of him, he was so scary and creepy, I bet some of the kids were a little freaked out of Scarecrow. Y'all got anything you want to throw in about Guardians of the Galaxy you thought was cool?
Ladies first, go ahead.
Spoiling?
I was going to say, I am Groot. I love Groot. Groot was great.
Me too. I loved Groot. Actually, I loved every character in there. I love Rocket. Yeah. I love Drax. Truth is, I did not expect to enjoy this film, really. A couple months ago when I saw the previews, I thought, it looked okay. But within the last 2 or 3 weeks, it started looking better and better. And I loved it when I had seen it twice already.
Obviously, you
liked
it.
I was very, very impressed with Dave Bautista, because I'm a WWE nut, and the truth is I'm not a haven't been a huge fan of his as a wrestler, but I am a huge fan of his in this film, so I wish he was as cool like this in the wrestling.
And Michelangelo, I think, is the character that seems to have changed the most, with yet still keeping the same charm that he's always had, but always they always seem to do a slightly different take on how they want to voice him.
Yeah, yeah.
That's always fun.
Yeah, somebody said to me down at Comic-Con that we were talking, and he said, so did you have anything to do with the movie that's coming out in a couple weeks? I said, no, the Michael Bay one? No, I mean, I haven't had anything to do with anything Ninja Turtles other than the series that I did, for those 10 seasons. And he said, gosh, I don't understand that. I mean, not as one of the voices, but it would have been hilarious, like, to, pull you in, as an ancillary character or, a waiter in a restaurant or something, just as like a little Easter egg. And I thought that would have been hilarious. That would have been fun to do.
And this isn't something I have never experienced before because I've never seen Cars Land before. But every night at dusk, they play the song Life Could Be a Dream.
Shaboom, shaboom.
Exactly.
Shaboom, shaboom. And then the neon lights come on.
They turn on all the neon lights. And it's beautiful.
It was so much that it inspired you to dance with some guy named Brian.
Yes. Well, Laura held a contest to see who could do the best performance to the song. And a lot of our podcasting friends are couples, like Scott and Tracy.
Yep, saw them dancing as well.
Sarah and Richard.
I don't think they were on the video that I saw.
They were there. Unfortunately, I had to grab whoever was nearby. And I want a recount.
Like you'll have the family of blood or human nature and the family of blood. Those two go together. Those were David Tennant ones where he was human for a bit. And those are really good. But originally it was a children's series that was supposed to teach about history.
Yep.
And they've retweaked it a bit. But so the monsters, it's never really too scary for children, supposedly. But yeah, some of the newer ones I think are a little frightening.
Yeah, they're just that frightening visage and the way like the silence would be there and then they weren't there.
Yeah. Or now my daughter who's 18 years old is scared of the angel in my grandma's front yard.
We expected some characters to make appearances, but I had a list of different characters that I would kind of like to see pop up, like maybe see Vader do something a little bit. Or maybe even the Emperor, perhaps even Grand Moff Tarkin maybe makes an appearance.
I'm sure they're going to follow that same Marvel Comics series that we had in the 70s and 80s where Vader wasn't always the villain of the issue, but we'd see him rolling in and out every couple of episodes, issues rather. And I'm sure we're going to see him a couple times a season, just maybe giving the Inquisitor some direction or him having to take action into his own hands. I hope we don't see too much of him because this is not really his story.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't want them to overuse him.
Right.
And I would like to see Tarkin. I don't want to see the Emperor just because in Star Wars we never saw the Emperor.
That's true.
He was in his throne room or wherever he was and just being guarded by himself.
Yeah.
And I don't really think until Return of the Jedi where he had to come out and talked to Vader one-on-one that he did. I think he was very, very secluded.
There was a man who went a little overboard judging comic books, and some of it is some people did go too far. You had a lot of your Tales of the Crypt type things, and they go a little too far. But because of that, this man decided that Batman and Robin were a way to commercial a different lifestyle. And
it was a bad influence to have like a young boy who was going and putting himself in danger and always running around with an older man, looked creepy and weird.
And so they had stuff like that, that basically now comic books have become the enemy.
Hey, where are all my comic books?
Oh, those dreadful things.
I gave those away.
And there were thousands of comics that were burnt.
Yeah. Well, this happened later than what I was about to bring up.
But in the 50s this happened.
But it really also took into the 60s and made some 60s comics rare as well.
That was later, but this first happened in the 50s, and then they burnt a whole bunch of comics.
Yeah.
But which is funny, because the people who kept their comics, like the Superman and Batman and stuff, they're now worth a lot more money.
Yes, because
of that.
It's rare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had Walt Disney came back in 1956. He'd been a little busy in 55 opening Disneyland and doing the movie Lady and the Tramp. And so in 1956, we decided to build a public pool here, which was pretty darn progressive for a little town of less than 3,000 in the middle of the 1950s to have a public pool. So they passed the bond and started building the pool, and they go, what are we going to call it? So let's write Walt Disney a letter and see if it would be okay if we named it Walt Disney Swimming Pool and Park, just hoping he'd say, go ahead. First letter back was he was thrilled. Next letter back was, we going to have a dedication? Well, we sure could. Lafisha would like to come, and Roy would like to come, and they'd like to bring their wives. So in 1956, Walt came back to dedicate the swimming pool and park.
Well, when Walt Disney came to dedicate a pool in 56, we still use it today. He came back in 1960 to dedicate our new school. The one he went to was Park School. But of course that was torn down and we built a new Walt Disney School. When he came for that dedication, he gave us that flagpole. That's my husband standing to the right of it and Walt to the left. And that flagpole came. From the Squaw Valley Olympics.
Mentioned something about that.
He had been chairman of pageantry and sent us the tallest pole, which is still out here in the lawn of our school.
It's more of a contemporary Fantasia.
Yeah, because it is. There's a lot of great music in there.
The entire film was based on music like Fantasia was. But it's more contemporary stories, more contemporary animation than Fantasia was. It's not just classical music, but it's more of what would have been pop in 1948.
Yeah. And it's hard to not walk away after watching Johnny Appleseed singing along some of the tunes on there. I always get, the Lord is good to me, so I will thank the Lord for giving me the things I need, the sun above and my appleseed, something like that. Yeah, it's a fun little song and lots of good kind of toe-tapping kind of things that'll kind of get stuck in your head. And boy, if I could find a soundtrack for Melody Time, I'd be happy. Or even Fun and Fancy Free, because there's a lot of good stuff in there. You know, these are almost like forgotten treasures that are not as nice to, you know, as people, because it's not a full Cinderella fairy tale, and or which those are, of course, great. We do love those. But these are classic films as well.
Frau Blücher.
Exactly.
Because it wasn't until like we'd seen it together, you know, that I really was able to see the first part of it.
Really?
Yes, I've caught the end on one evening or Saturday morning or whatever, and it scared me because you got the flying pumpkin coming at you, and I thought, man, this is a scary, you know, a scary one.
Yeah. Well, so at least I'm not alone. See, in second grade, we watched it in school and freaked me out.
So, the Hitchhiking Ghost came in, and which was amazing, and they sang songs to us. They sang Grim Grinning Ghosts. And then Beauregard, our butler, would come in and chase them away. I'm trying to think what else. So then we would also have April come in. April was the girl with the trapeze artist, ballerina with the parasol.
Yeah, what we learned is that her backline story is her family worked in the circus, and they were part of a trapeze act, and she walked the tightrope.
Castlevania 2 on the original NES I thought was fantastic. It had some like light role playing elements to it, where you had to go from town to town, and there, it had some fetch quests in it, and so that the fetch quests go back 25 years, sad to say, but it was pretty good game. And then it kind of went in the series went downhill quickly for a while, but then it peaked back up on the original PlayStation with Symphony of the Night, which was just fantastic.
Brilliant, brilliant game. Of course, I gotta say, I liked Castlevania 3, though. I did like that one. I played the Dickens out of that thing. And that was, I think, one of the first attempts to really kind of almost make a cinematic experience out of a game, because even the opening credit title screen had like film strip things going up the side, and you had like a good long shot of the castle and things like that. And it seemed like they really were stepping up to make a cinematic experience that really, when they got to Symphony of the Night, it's very cinematic with the opening and coming looking at the castle, and the storytelling is done brilliantly. The graphics were fantastic for the time. Oh, and the music is awesome in that game too.
Well, the music in Castlevania, pretty much across the board, has always been good. And the game I was talking about was Lords of Shadow. For some reason, that just escaped me. But Castlevania Lords of Shadow, I thought was really, really good.
Boy, every time you mention some of these serials, I'm like, oh, I remember that stuff. It was so good.
Some of them are better remembered than eaten.
Yeah, like the monster cereals. I started eating those like a year ago, and I managed to even find it was they re-released Fruit Brute and everything.
Yes.
And I was just eating it, having a good time, and then I had to do an A1C, and my blood sugar was way too high, and I got a good scolding. So I looked at buying something this year, and my wife says, no, you aren't.
Not again. Not again.
So there's season 3A was all about Neverland, and it was an 11-week run, and then they had a hiatus for like 3 months, 3 or 4 months.
Well, in 1945, the Macy's Day Parade surpassed 2 million people in attendance.
Wow.
So it was growing. 6 days after the, this is sad, 6 days after the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade went ahead as scheduled in hopes of raising the national spirit. Now, we actually just had the anniversary of his assassination just this past week, but that's a sad thing. We don't want to talk about it. We're a happy show. One of my favorite balloons, Snoopy, the Peanuts character created by Charles Schulz, holds the distinction of having the most Thanksgiving Day parade New York City parade floats with 6 different balloons since 1968.
Yeah.
I always love seeing Snoopy.
Snoopy was always the one for me. I even mentioned him in my sermon this morning. I mentioned Snoopy, you know, he's even on that movie I mentioned a while ago. Snoopy was the one to me. He's one of my favorites, you know. You got to love him. Whether he's Joe Cool or he's on the Red Baron or he's just walking around being himself, you got to love the guy.
New lightsaber. I've seen a lot of joking around about the extra blades, but everybody seems to think it's kind of cool, but also it's becoming a bit of a joke. I've seen pictures where they made it look like a Swiss Army knife, or if George Lucas had done this and it had so many different extra blades sticking off,
somebody had ridiculous. Somebody had kind of made a thing, okay, so the first trilogy we had one blade. Second trilogy, oh, we have two.
A dual blade.
Third trilogy, now we've got three.
Okay, well, this is 100th episode, myself, you're hearing again. That was everything from season one, but I just had to let you know that this may just be perfect for you if you are interested in podcasting yourself, okay? My friends, and they are legends in the industry, Luis and Kamala, have a proven marketing machine designed to help you attract high-profile interview opportunities, and that's not all. Their paid-to-podcast program puts a monetization process in there that has you creating income the moment you start your podcast channel. And here's the inside scoop from your friend in the know, namely me. They launched their program earlier this year and have been getting amazing results for their clients. Paid to podcast is already considered by their clients to be the number one way to launch and monetize your podcast fast. The price is about to go up to around $15,000, which is still only a fraction of the true value of this. But get this, they wanted to show gratitude for the success this program has generated for themselves and their clients, and they really want a really exciting way to find and promote some of the best secret hidden talents waiting to be seen and heard in the market today. So they're giving away one of their paid-to-podcast programs away, totally complimentary. So that means that you could win a fully sponsored place for the paid-to-podcast program, which is currently worth $10,000. But, of course, this will be absolutely no cost to you. So if you're chosen for this scholarship, you'll get plugged into their marketing machine that positions you and has you attracting the best interviews for your podcast channel, and you don't need to have one either. They'll help you create your own niche, and all through the program, they'll be with you. And so, yes, this could be you. However, you have to be in it to win it. Now, it's super easy to win. I'm going to put a link in the podcast notes that you're seeing. If you go to neverlandpodcast.com and find the show notes for this episode, I'm going to be putting this link in the next few episodes. And you can find out about all the criteria and let them know why you would love to win. And that's it. So, since they've been telling me about this, I thought of all of you consider that you might be considering getting into podcasting, so I wanted to tell you all straight away, right here in my 100th episode. And considering, you know, that you might be considering podcasting yourself, this could be the perfect vehicle for you to take your public profile and your business to the next level. Because some people, they podcast as a business. Are you maybe thinking of, you have a business of some sort and you want to attach a podcast to it? This is a really good time to be able to step in. So once again, now remember, go to neverlandpodcast.com or look in the show notes here for this episode, and I'm going to put a link in there that you can click in and you can enter into this little contest and see if you can win this scholarship to be able to get into this program, and they'll help you get started with your new podcast. So yeah, if you're considering to do this, and believe me, it's a lot of fun. If you really have a passion for this, this is a great thing. And I bring this up mainly because through 100 episodes, I have been having a lot of fun. And as I mentioned when I was going through and selecting these clips, all the fun things I realized I've gotten to do and all the people I've gotten to meet through doing this show has been wonderful. And knowing that you are out there and you're listening to this and that you're enjoying this and you keep coming back every week, I love that. I feel like I've got kind of a connection with, even though a lot of you I've never, you know, met or anything like that. It's really fun to know that you're there. And, you know, I get to see where downloads come from around the world. It's very, very special, and I love making this show for you. And I hope I can continue, you know, go up to another 100 episodes to 200 episodes, because I'm, like I said, I'm having a lot of fun doing this, and I love that you're listening and you're enjoying it. I'm hoping I'm making your day better every time you get to hear an episode of the Neverland Podcast. But if you're considering making a podcast yourself, like I said, go to the link that's in the show notes. But let's go listen now to season two and hear the rest of the way up to our 100th episode. All right, now our very special content for the week, we're going to go beyond Disney but still get a little bit of a Disney magic. I don't know if you've ever seen this movie. It's a great movie, but we're going to go back in the Neverland TARDIS now, and we're going to hear Jimmy Stewart, Donna Reed, the original cast of It's a Wonderful Life doing a radio version of that show. It's going to be great. You're going to love this. Quickly, come on, let's get in the Neverland TARDIS and go. But they had like trading card style images taken from the teaser, and it reveals the names of some of those characters we saw. The woman we saw riding the, for all intents and purposes, it was like a speeder. Her name is Rey, R-E-Y. Now, they say the numbers on the cards were significant. She was card number 74. There was also BB-8. That is the little droid we see on a ball. A lot of people are calling it like a soccer ball. He is card number 11, or it is card number 11. And the interesting thing I've also found is that Mark Hamill has released some in an interview talking about getting to play with the actual droid, because that is a practical effect and not a CGI effect.
Merry Christmas!
And a bah humbug to you!
That boyfriend, always so full of forgiveness and love.
Yes, he always was a little weird. I'll tell you how Christmas ought to be. Everybody ought to get up early. But not to see the presents neath the tree. If Christmas cheer they're looking for, a cup of tea's enough to pour. That's the way Christmas ought to be.
I really like the Elf King. I know he's like kind of the jerk character in it, but like,
it resolves that very well.
It does resolve that very well and kind of ties into his madness and like why he is the way that he is. And so that was nice to see.
He's a jerk for a reason.
However, I really thought, like, you know, I'm watching him with like the stag and the big antlers, and I'm like,
oh, yes.
I want, I mean, if, you know, if I could be in Middle Earth, like, that's what I want. I want a giant deer to ride around on.
Everybody, imagine a very large deer with moose antlers. It was flipping awesome.
It was awesome.
The ones that pop up a lot, you know, I knew about them when I was a kid, and so it was really a thrill as I'm starting to get to meet a lot of these voice actors, you know, and it's really awesome. I'm really sad I never got to meet Christine, but she sounds like a really amazing person.
The first thing I ever wrote with Carrie again was an episode of Gem and the Holograms, one episode called Video Wars. and we wrote that together, and we're hoping it would lead to a whole bunch of cartoon work, and it really didn't. It led to nothing, actually. But later, years later, I went to work for Disney TV Animation and ultimately became an executive there and developed a bunch of shows, which led me to develop Gargoyles, which led me to become a producer. And I actually became a producer first and a writer second on the show.
Now, Arrow, I missed out on, as I said, I only watched like the first season. I did kind of catch, of course, when they crossed over with Flash, I had to watch that. And I did catch quite a bit of their mid-season finale. But overall, so what sort of things have happened with Arrow, and what might we hope to see coming?
Oh, are you ready for spoilers?
Be careful, be just in case. But there might be other people out there who maybe haven't watched Arrow, but maybe they've been watching The Flash and are like, geez.
Salmon ladders.
Salmon ladders.
That's the ladders. Two words for you. These are the only two words you need to go watch this show.
Black Canary. Is that what you were going to say, Emily?
No, that was definitely
Felicity.
Not.
Oh, Felicity. That's two
that's
words.
That's two words.
It's Felicity.
Did you see the Ripped Apparel t-shirts today?
No.
There's a Felicity t-shirt there.
Oh, fantastic.
Until I was a bit older and bought a copy of The Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, the only version I had of Winnie the Pooh was The New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. So I kind of got used to that and watching that all the time.
Yeah, yeah. It was a good series.
Yeah.
Some good stories.
And really, you know, delving into like some iconic characters for Disney already with Winnie the Pooh. So I guess it was kind of a natural fit going into Tailspin. Suddenly now they've got, you know, characters from the Jungle Book and they have to have a new look and a new situation for them. Seems like you're a natural fit.
Yeah. It was those standard characters along with a whole new world of other characters.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun to work on.
Mm-hmm. And you also got to be in a movie with Christopher Walken.
Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, not only did I get to be in a movie, but I got to be edited out from a movie right next to Christopher Walken.
Aladdin.
Aladdin. What a great, great movie. To the late, great Robin Williams, we love you.
We love you, brother. Too bad he's not the one who got to sing the love song in this, though.
No, but he did a lot of good songs himself.
He did. You know, I do have an alternative version of this song that we're about to play that I should have probably pulled out. I'll pull it out sometime. It's you would not expect. For anyone who knows who these people are, I have a copy of Mark Lowry. Well, it's a Mark Lowry concert, but he steps away. And Sandy Patty sings it with I don't forget the guy's name. He's this tenor who used to sing with the Gaither Vocal Band.
Huh.
And they do a really nice rendition of this song. But we'll play their official Disney version right now. It's A Whole New World from Aladdin.
Wonderful.
Now, many people have already heard that Howard the Duck is making a return to the comic books. It's been a while since he's been published in his own book. He's kind of normally just pops up here and there. We all know he exists, even if we don't see him published in any fashion for a long time. Well, because everybody's talking about him again, and after Guardians of the Galaxy, he had a really great cameo being voiced by Seth Green. This might be also a hopeful that, you know, he might be popping up again in some Guardians movies. Maybe Howard will get his own movie again that will be a lot better than the previous one. Although, when I was a kid, I liked the previous movie. It was kind of fun. You realize it's not a great movie, but it's still fun.
As a kid, a great double feature was Howard the Duck and Little Shop of Horrors.
There you go. With Mask, Mobile Armored Strike Command.
Now, this cartoon was obviously made just for the toys.
Right.
The toys are awesome. In fact, I'm holding my Thunderhawk right now while we're talking.
Now, which one was Thunderhawk? Was that
Thunderhawk is the Camaro, yeah. That you press a button and the wings pop up. The spoiler pops up. It's got engines coming out the back. He's got a couple of bombs that release underneath it. It's Matt Tracker's Camaro, and it's awesome.
We're going to do kind of just a tribute episode to Leonard Nimoy. I have some great audio to share related to that for his role as Mr. Spock that we all know him as. Disney filed for patent on the ride system on November 16th, 1995. The Imagineers reportedly asked Harrison Ford to reprise his role as Indiana Jones, but it is unknown whether or not Ford assisted in the making of the attraction. It doesn't seem like he did. His voice is not in there. Anything I've seen, there's a, I'm going to share some audio later, where there was a special done on ABC for part of the Magical World of Disney. It was kind of a special, but you never get to see actually Indiana Jones from the front. It's always from his back. It's all in shadow. I'm sure they've modeled the figure to kind of look like Harrison Ford a little bit, but it doesn't sound like he was really that involved. But anyways, the Temple of Forbidden Eye, of course, premiered on March 3rd, and this was, of course, the day before it was open to the public, but there was invited celebrity guests were George Lucas and Michael Eisner, formerly, of course, Disney CEO, Dan Aykroyd, and Carrie Fisher. And to promote the opening of the attraction, the Disney Channel produced an hour-long TV program entitled Indiana Jones Adventure, featuring Karen Allen and John Rhys Davies reprising their roles from Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Clark had a good one last couple of weeks. He brought in a fart. Fart noise maker, and Chloe played along. So whenever he pushed the button, and she would just be like, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry. This is so embarrassing."
How did you guys react? What were your emotions when you watched the final movie?
I was surprised that I was forced to pay to get it.
Every superhero had a bandolier or belt full of pouches. Oh. And pouches on there, the cargo pants era.
Yeah. Yes. That way they weren't necessarily wearing tights. It's like, no, look, we have pockets and everything. Yeah.
It all started with a character called Longshot.
Yeah.
Because the artist said, well, if he's got all of this gear, where is he going to put it?
Exactly.
And it worked, pouches and pockets work with Batman, but it doesn't work with every superhero.
Yeah.
And in the mid-90s, thanks to Rob Liefeld, you saw it on just about every superhero. Yeah.
I always liked how Spider-Man would sometimes you'd see him pull up the shirt half of his tights, which you didn't realize he could do, and he would have a Spidey belt underneath, and he had a signal light there as a buckle, but he could keep his web cartridges all in these pouches on this belt.
Why did the seagulls fly over the sea?
Because if they flew over the bay, they'd be bagels. Well, why do young pirates always fail when saying the alphabet in kindergarten?
Aye, because their fathers insist they get 7 C's.
Aye, and there are 7 C's.
Arr, why is pirating addictive?
Well, they say once you lose your first hand, you get hooked. But how do pirates know that they are pirates?
Are they think, therefore they are.
Oh, but Captain, you said you don't think, you must not are.
Mutiny.
It was no mutiny.
Mutiny.
It was Peg Leg Jones.
Mutiny.
His character in the characterization in the first film really was remarkable. It was so fun and quirky. I just was thrilled when I saw it in the theater. I know that guy. And about a year later, I auditioned for a commercial for Cherry Coke and got that and played a greaser, which in this Cherry Coke commercial that was based on Back to the Future. You can see it on YouTube, I think. And Victoria Jackson is the roller skating waitress or whatever. Anyway, so it was kind of ironic, having this little connection there, and then to get the role. On the other hand, it was odd because obviously something was not right because he wasn't returning. So I figured he had another bigger project that was more important to him, and that they needed to fill his shoes. Now, originally in the script, Back to the Future 2 and 3 was one script, Paradox.
Mm-hmm.
And in part 3, the role of Seamus was to be played by Crispin.
So what inspired you to make a He-Man film?
He-Man has always been an obsession with me. It's I've loved the toys and the cartoon and everything since I can remember seeing my first episode when I was about 3. And I've always just enjoyed the characters and the stories and the entire property. And they're the only toys that I've kept from my childhood are all the Masters of the Universe things.
Hi, my name is Beth Chalk, and I'm the creator of the Jim Henson's Labyrinth, the movie playset on Lego Ideas. I'm a stay-at-home wife now. I used to be an engineer, but I've been spending most of my time working on artistic interests and Lego Ideas, creating Lego sets as part of that.
You got a song here that's from Avengers Age of Ultron. I don't quite understand why that is.
Well, I wanted to scare everybody. I had to have a goth band come in, right?
Yes. Sure. I mean, I see I've got no strings on here.
Yes. But I'm going from Pinocchio, so hopefully it'll be a lot happier.
Okay. That version, so. Yes.
So when you were doing these auditions, was Huey Lewis sitting next to you by chance?
Yeah, he had a bullhorn, and it was not good.
Kept saying everyone was too darn loud.
Yeah, I can't help it. We can play it loud in Neverland, okay? You know, we're on an island. Who are we going to disturb? Pirates?
Some of them were already disturbed.
Yeah. But also going upon Pinocchio, this could just take the whole thing, too. When You Wish Upon a Star. I mean, let's face it. That is one of those, the epitome of Disney. Everyone was going to think of that song. Because Walt had, you know, such a lighthearted and humorous view of the Uncle Remus stories, and so positive, he wanted a movie that depicted that positive feel. And so you have, you know, from the very start of it, here is a little boy, little white boy Johnny, who meets his you know, little, I don't remember what the other little boy's name was, you know, a little colored boy, and they just become fast friends, and they're hanging out together, and they go stare at a grandfather clock and watch it chime and stuff. And it's like, you know what? No one is making any sort of a deal or issue of anyone being a different color. They just see, look, it's another person, and oh, we're so excited to see Uncle Remus. I remember when he used to tell me stories, and oh, I want to meet Uncle Remus and hear his stories. No one cares what color they are.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I took a 10-minute break to have some Kansas City barbecue.
I got the email from Kirk with the panel list of who's going to moderate which panel. Oh, cool. I can see an email. Oh, crap. I got to do sit-ups. The workout that you have on the show, I mean, yeah. That's got to be pretty grueling.
It's pretty grueling. I mean, it's like if Oliver has to know how to speak Russian, or if Oliver has to know how to shoot a bow and arrow, like all of these things are things that we build into the infrastructure of the show. And the fitness is something that we build into the infrastructure of the show. You know, I get scheduled workouts every week.
There's also appears to be no consequences for any of your actions. The main characters, basically, they steal a car. And I was like, wait, nobody reports the car stolen? Because the guy clearly saw you two. But he didn't report his truck stolen, because your truck could be obviously stand out. It's got busted glass. It's all, you know, it's banged up. Yeah, I don't know. If you actually start thinking during the movie, you're lost. Don't try not to think. I guess when the first time I watch it, think about it later, and then you can determine whether or not you'll actually buy this when it comes out. Because I mean, like I said, it is a lot of fun, but there's so many problems with it, and you kind of care about the characters, but the most cute story is kind of a sad little story, because Frank, played by George Clooney, they show him as a boy, and he creates a friendship and has kind of a crush on Athena, not knowing Athena is not human. She's an android or a robot, whatever, or an auto animatronic, as she refers to herself, which is cute that they did that.
You know,
I'll beat you both together, I'll fight you both apart. Is that right?
Yep.
Right.
Yes,
thank you. I know someone will always correct me on that. And then Andre has the next line. He says, I guess not very long. Like that, right? Well, he didn't get to the word long when he let out what has to be the most monumental fart. I kid you not, I'm serious. Folks, we've all experienced what we've accused people of, giant farts, I'm sure. This was a giant's fart. Okay? All right? Remember the scene in the movie where Andre says, "Everybody move," right? You remember that moment?
Yeah.
And then Rob Reiner cut to all the folks in the village, and they all look in shock when they hear him scream. That was the exact reaction of the entire cast and crew. I'm telling you guys, it was 15 seconds long.
Oh my goodness!
It's a long time. Don't try this at home, kids. And it, the sonic resonance of it was so monumental that I looked over at the sound guy and he lifted the headphones up.
Oh my god!
And then I looked up at Andre and he had steam coming out of the top of his head. I don't know why to this day, but the combination of this fart that could be heard in Beijing, and everyone was covering the rear, and the steam coming out of his head, I just couldn't look at him anymore. I just had to look away. I just was like that. And you know what's so great is that in America, when someone farts, you guys call it. You're like, come on, really, dude, you know? But in England, when someone farts, everyone sort of becomes very weird about it. They're all like, oh, looks like rain. Strange, but it's wonderful. But in this instance, it was so mammoth, it could be heard like three counties over. When he was done, there was like, you could hear a pin drop. It was just silent. And the whole crew went just dead silent. And Rob Reiner, the director, broke the silence and he goes, "Hey, Andre, you okay?"
The way they did the projections on the buildings, where you can see the chimney sweeps do the step in time dance from Mary Poppins, where you see the lanterns from Tangled, just amazing. Honestly, I was spent more time looking at the projections on the buildings than I did the fireworks themselves.
Yeah, I saw some video of that, and I told Heather, so I don't know if I'd want to be watching the projections or the fireworks. I'd be just caught in the middle, just like, oh my gosh, look at this, but oh my gosh, look at that.
You need to see it three or four different times from different angles to appreciate everything.
Yeah, because I hear the Matterhorn gets turned into Mount Punahakalugi.
That's what I hear. I couldn't see it from my vantage point. I didn't see the Matterhorn, so I didn't experience that part. There's projections on Small World that I missed because I was nowhere near there. I could barely see Nemo flying in front of the castle. Tinkerbell and Nemo both fly in this show.
But first, I feel that we ought to congratulate Mr. Disney. You see, he won another Academy Award last week for his picture, The Country Cousin. Now, that's quite an honor, Donald. Besides, Donald, I want to whisper something to you, and this is very confidential. You know, your boss, Mr. Walt Disney, is really a wonderful artist. He's brought so much joy and beauty into the world through his creation. Of course, Donald. You've become a friend of everyone, too, children and grown-ups.
You've got a brand new book, and I've already read it. I ordered a copy, and it didn't take me too long to read. I just sped through it. But you and Will Ryan got together and wrote a book called Adventures in Oddity.
Yes, we did. As he'll say, it was 5 years in the making. But once we finally decided, hey, let's get this out, it came fast and furious. It was fun.
So it was kind of his idea to write this?
Well, actually, you see the picture on the cover of Adventures in Oddity?
Uh-huh.
I came across a picture about 8 years ago, and we actually took that photo about 30 years ago before we were ever on Adventures in Odyssey. I asked him to pose with me for some commercial headshots, photos, and we took that picture, and I found it, like I said, maybe 8 years ago, maybe, and I called him up. I said, "Will, we look like Connie and Eugene in this picture." I was so, I was amazed when I saw it. I said, we got to send this to Focus. And he said, Focus on the Family. He said, no, save it for our book. I said, okay, what book? He goes, we're going to write one. I said, all right.
Somehow or another, I missed this. There was a vote for Disney Infinity 3.0 to have either an Olaf playable figure or Darkwing Duck. Now, had I known, I would have been on here and telling you all, Darkwing Duck. Everybody, quick, vote for Darkwing Duck. But I didn't know, and so we weren't able to act, and the Frozen Fanatics came out in droves, and Olaf has been chosen for Disney Infinity 3.0. Wow. What, the animatronics themselves, but not necessarily the outer appearance of them, I guess, was moved over?
That's correct. They were stripped of their costumes, and just the skeletons are used.
So there are actually naked characters from America Sings over at Star Tours.
Yeah, the G2 droids.
Just look at their feet. You can see that they're wet.
Yep.
Well, now that's interesting.
That's what G2 stands for, is they were formerly the geese.
Huh. Fascinating. All the interesting things.
Now this might be a sad one for Paul, because I'm sure, like me, Paul loves Big Al. But I know that the animatronic for Big Al has been repurposed and is used in the Haunted Mansion Holiday.
Do you know what character he is now?
Oogie Boogie?
Yep, Oogie Boogie.
Tron ride. It's like a roller coaster, but you're riding on a light cycle. I mean, so many fun things. I mean, a Tarzan, and of course a big Frozen show, a big sing-along coming.
It was kind of bizarre. The late 70s, early 80s, you had Hanna-Barbera making cartoons of Batman and Superman, but you also had Filmation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Filmation Superman.
And so you had two different things, and the same kind of thing happened with Marvel, where they were having different companies making it, you know, so you have a lot of great cartoons, like, you know, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends and all that.
Love it.
And, yeah, that's where I first saw Iceman.
Yep.
And all that.
And, of course, Firestar. Firestar. That's that was the beginning from. Of Firestar, yeah.
Repulsive Blaster has joined the fight.
Awesome. So awesome. We're both synced together now. And now we have to sync to our power activator. So aim at me. Don't blast me.
Activator detected. I
can't see my laser. Is that...
He was an animator, he was a cartoonist, he was a movie maker, obviously a theme park operator. He was also an ambulance driver, a failed businessman. You know, he was involved in a lot of different ventures. And the argument that I really try to make is, if you take a look at his life and look backwards, particularly in relationship to his father and the way in which his father had worked at the 1893 World's Fair in Chicago – it seems pretty obvious that Walt at some point was going to build a place like Disneyland, but that doesn't happen until he's 53, 54 years of age. And again, it's only obvious looking back. And we see that in a lot of people's lives. Steve Jobs, in a famous commencement speech, talks about connecting the dots, but only connecting them backwards. And so, you know, my encouragement to the reader is to, again, keep moving forward and trusting that what you're doing today is going to take you to what you're supposed to be doing tomorrow.
So I took my favorite completed, drawn, lettered scenes from all those books and sent it out to editors. I said, hey, I got all these books coming out in the near future. Take a look. And I heard almost nothing, basically crickets for 13 months.
Ooh.
And then an editor at Marvel happened to flip through my packet and read some of the stuff and gave me an opportunity. Alejandro Arbona, he's not at Marvel anymore, but he gave me a shot on a Legion of Monsters miniseries in 2011.
Wow.
And while I was working on that, somebody quit X-Men Season 1. I'm not even sure who the original writer was, but they needed a writer right then, and I said I wanted more work. So, yeah, so my first two books were X-Men Season 1 and Legion of Monsters. And they did pretty well. The season one books were successful, so they gave me another shot and another shot and another shot. And yeah, now it's my full-time job.
As long as it sells, yeah.
For me, they wanted him to be a farmer, a West Country farmer. It's not my scavengers. He's from, you know, what do we call it? Like, he's sort of Welsh almost. And they played this hook for me, this one sentence that whenever we were shooting, I would say the sentence before we'd do the take, and director would put me back in the dialect of the character, and it was a recording from an actual farmer saying, "That's a nice shiny apple."
Star-Tour, we were concerned about you. Is our agent safe?
Safe, but perhaps a little shaken.
But sadly, Walt passed away about 5 months after the dedication. So even though it was a passion project of Walt and Roy, he couldn't really see it through and financially support it. So Disney backed away from all of Walt's auxiliary projects. Roy went off to build Disney World, which is exactly what he should have done because that was the important thing to give to us.
Yeah.
And Marceline just lived in Midget Autopia, lived in Marceline, and was very popular. But the small town of Marceline literally couldn't afford the overhead and the maintenance to keep that ride going. And it shut down in 1977, which is incredibly sad.
But thankfully, they kept the cars because I love seeing that in the museum there. As somebody would walk into the museum and you go to the table and you buy your ticket there, but right over to your right, there is one of the cars just right there in like pristine condition, and there's photos from kids riding on it and from the dedication.
But there's a cow in the back of the shop, and me and Roger are doing a dialogue, and that's a dose and action. So, I mean, okay, car, all right, fine. Okay, take two. So, anyway, all right, take three. I'm not joking. Every single time we started the dialogue, this cow, nothing personal, started, you know, mooing. And so, I mean, that's on the outtakes. So a lot of little things like that was so much fun. So Roger was one of the fun ones I had to work with.
Oh, she's awesome.
And she plays Disney tunes on the bagpipes.
She's so awesome. So awesome.
Playing the Mickey Mouse song and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And of course, I don't remember the lady's name, but she's there every time. And the guy who always calls the parade is like, and here's da-da-da-da. And her goat.
Yes!
She's got her goat pulling a cart behind it with a little kid in it, as usual.
Yes.
So always there with a goat. Of course, there's a group that has, you know, horses, and they have their nice show horses mm-hmm. they come out with.
The Shriners show up.
No, the Shriners weren't there this year.
Oh, okay.
But they did have, of course, they have the typical boat full of little boys dressed as pirates.
Pirates, yep.
And the princess tea parties, you know, with all yep. the little girls. All this has been made up earlier, in which they have the makeup thing going all day. Mm-hmm. But, and of course, they have, like, Miss Marceline, Miss Teen Marceline, and all that type of thing.
Yep.
And pageants you don't really hear much about, like Miss Outdoors Missouri and mm-hmm. things like that.
Well, and a great thing about having a show where we talk about The Flash and having a series of The Flash is that the character itself, even in the comics, has just this rich history of a variety of villains, really interesting creative villains, you know, and sometimes people you would never expect. I mean, like the Trickster, you know.
Yeah.
This Rogues Gallery. So they have so many different characters that are really Flash specific, whereas you got your, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and even Arrow, where they're pulling villains from other franchises and other characters in the universes, in the comic universes.
So that was kind of neat. It kind of mixed things up, and so I really enjoyed it. And I am hopeful to see although the game is released in November, it will be before The Force Awakens comes out, but, you know, a few updates, a few, you know, extra downloads, and we might see some environments from The Force Awakens other than just, like, we already know Jakku is going to be a playable planet.
Right.
But maybe there'll be some other planets that will be added in, and maybe they'll have some downloadable extra heroes. Maybe you'll be able to play as Kylo Ren, you know, stuff like that. When you first, I saw Back to the Future 2 in the theater. Did you guys see that one in the theater at least?
Home release.
And you too, Eric?
Same here. Again, every time I saw a Back to the Future movie, okay. It was home video.
So you guys had already heard that there was going to be a third one before you saw the second one probably, right?
I saw 2 and 3
on the same night. Okay. Well, for me, I think I already maybe have mentioned this, but yeah, to have that cliffhanger ending, and then suddenly a big trailer for Back to the Future 3, I remember completely floored me. The thing is although I did see the first two movies in the theater, the third one I didn't see later until it'd been on video for probably a year.
All right, number three would have to be Mother Gothel.
That's a good one.
That is a good one. Is she the one that keeps you up at night?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah, you know. But then knowing that she fell out a window, which is also gruesome, but great.
And that wraps up episode 100 of the Neverland Podcast. And once again, I thank you all for listening, and those of you that have listened to all 100 episodes and all the bonus episodes making 109, or well, actually this would be 110. Thank you so much for listening every week. And remember to keep that pixie in your pocket so you can share a little pixie dust with other people. And of course, I remind you that is that good attitude and being young at heart. Now, I did have some new feedback pop up on iTunes this week. But I think I'm going to save the contest results until a later time. We'll let this drive go on a little bit longer for a few more reviews, maybe. Or I might just go ahead and give away some prizes next week. I spent so much time putting this show together, I really didn't have time to choose a winner. So go ahead and get those reviews in. If you go to NeverlandPodcast.com, click on the iTunes link, or search us for us on iTunes, and leave your reviews. And I thank you for every one of them. Bye!
Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast. Please subscribe and rate the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Blueberry. We love to hear from you on twitter.com/neverlandpcast and facebook.com/neverlandpodcast. Leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492 and send email to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com. Join us next week and we'll once again go to Disney and beyond. The Neverland Podcast is copyright Blue Band Productions and all original content belongs to the same. Other content is copyright of their respective creators and is used under Creative Commons license.
Good night, Neverland!
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.